Welcome to our podcast. Dr. Mari and I are going to talk about fear today and how we allow subconscious and even conscious fears to get in the way of us having relationships that we want, doing the things that we want in our lives, and how fear stops us from living actually a life that we love. So Dr. Mari, say hello to everybody and let's get going.
Hello, hello, hello.
All right. So I'm going to start today with a call that I actually had with a client who was in a marriage for a very long time. And it's actually a male, and he gave me permission to talk about him in this podcast. But at a very young age, he wound up getting his then girlfriend pregnant, and they had three kids, and he married her after she got pregnant with their first child. And it was a situation that many people find themselves in when they're young, and they begin to change and they begin to grow, and they're not used to having these early pressures and expectations put on them. And suddenly the life and the dreams that they had, they feel have to be put on the back burner or completely put away. So fast forward about 15 years to 2019, where we are now, and this gentleman is now separated and been separated from his wife for about 4 years. And they've just decided, for themselves, for whatever reason, to not file for a divorce. And I was talking to him today, and the question that he was specifically asking in relationship to relationships, romantic relationships, was this: why is it that I feel like I can't have everything? There is a woman here that makes me feel like I'm over the moon and I'm in love with her, and that scares me. And then there's a woman over here that I feel comfortable with, but we don't have that same feeling. And he's comfortably uncomfortable in a current relationship with a woman, and the relationship is dwindling because there just aren't those sparks there. And so for him, he has a lot of fear of not being good enough from the experiences that he had from being a young man for the past 15 years and being in a relationship where neither one of them wound up really liking each other and began to tear each other down. And so what we want to talk about today is not just what happens when you're fearful in relationships, but how we allow fear subconsciously and consciously to get in our way and stop us from living the life that we dreamed of or that we love. And I really do believe that we can all live a life that we dream of. I believe we can have a life that we love. I think we just have to choose it. And part of choosing it is understanding what is actually stopping us. And so I'm going to ask you, as a therapist, to talk a little bit about relationships using the example that I gave you. So when you have someone that comes to you and they say, Dr. Mari, on the left over here is this woman that I'm comfortable with and I feel like I'm settling with and I love her and I care about her or him, whoever you're involved with. And then over here on the right is a woman that I'm really in love with and I want everything with her, but I'm afraid that if she scratches the surface a little bit and she finds out what I am underneath because of his beliefs that he hasn't identified yet, what do I do? Because I don't want to live a life where I'm settling anymore. How would you begin? What would you tell him? What you would prescribe or say to someone that says, help me know what these fears are and how to handle them.
Ooh, that's a loaded question, right?
So, yeah.
You know, of course, in this example, there's lots of things going on. But we're talking about fear in particular, and we're talking about relationships and how this subconscious fear, or sometimes conscious, because he's pretty conscious about the fact that he's settling, and he's pretty conscious about the fact that there's somebody that makes his motor run, right? But he's not necessarily conscious about the self-talk he has going on that says, you can't do that. Why would you try that? That's scary. Don't do scary. Stay safe, right? And so the first thing is just understanding what that dialogue is, right? So how do you know something you don't know? You know, that's like the million-dollar question.
How do you know something you don't know? Will you begin to ask yourself a question?
Right.
To uncover the unknown. I call it making the unknown known.
Yeah, right, exactly, right? And so in my world, I call making the covert overt. It's all the same stuff, right?
Right, got it.
You know, is that there's something undercover that we need to bring out into the open. The problem is that most people don't want it in the open because once they see it, they have to do something about it. Right.
But I think, yes, true. But I think that they want to do something about it. Now, if we're taking a little bit further, for example, like, oh my God, I have to change myself, because that's usually where it begins. Right. Doesn't mean you have to leave your relationship or, I mean, in this circumstance, if in order for him to have what he truly wants, he has to do something. It's him. It always begins with us. We make the change.
Absolutely. So this is my example. And I'm not saying that we don't want to do something about it. It's just that once you see something in your face, it's really hard to be in denial. It's really hard to stay in that place of lack of awareness, because you're now aware. And so then you're going to see it everywhere. So this is like one of my examples. You decide you're going to buy a white BMW because you love white BMWs. You buy a white BMW, and then guess what you see on the road everywhere? White BMWs. You like, does everybody have one? And before that, you never really noticed anyone else having one. You just didn't notice it, right? But now that you're aware of what you have, you're also aware what other people have too. And you start really focusing in on, does everybody have what I have? And why do they? And just, you know, should I have bought this car? All these subconscious messages that make me pay attention to all the white BMWs that are on the road.
Okay.
It's the same number. The number didn't change, probably. It's just my awareness does. So that's one example of just how when something is in front of your face, it's kind of hard to stay in this place of denial. And again, I'm not talking about denial as in you're so subconsciously unaware, you have to get to a hypnotist to get it out. I'm talking about just regular unawareness. You're just walking around in life without paying real attention.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that once we become aware and we can perceive this way of being, it magnifies it.
It magnifies it. So it's kind of hard to, that's what I'm saying, it's hard to not do something about it because it's there in your face all the time. So like, for instance, he has now witnessed and felt and experienced what true passion is, let's just say. He's going to see it every time it happens, every time he thinks about it. It becomes 1,000 times more magnified than it was before. So it's hard to stay settled now. It's hard to stay settled in this place where he doesn't have that.
But he was unsettled or is unsettled in the relationship where he feels like he's settling.
Well,
and he's
course.
Unsettled, right? Because he realizes, oh my God, I have this fear of passion and this relationship with this woman that if she sees who I really am, because he has this belief about himself,
right,
she's not going to want to be in a relationship. So we sabotage. I mean, I say, but everywhere that I look at this, you're telling me it's unsettling. He's unsettled with the woman he's settling with. He's unsettled sitting in the middle. In the unknown, and he's unsettled for the feelings that he has about this woman over here. I mean, talk about Everything's unsettled.
Right. Because again, this is just me and I, you know, take it for what it's worth, is that once that happens, it happens everywhere. It doesn't happen in just that one little place.
Oh, what you're saying is one thing affects another and Absolutely. Affects another. Okay. And affects, that's true. And so you're talking about the chain reaction that happens when we make an internal change.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
So now it brings so much awareness to all kinds of areas, even though you're only paying attention to one, you know, that you become unsettled in lots of things. So you'll see people become unsettled in their job that they were fine with, they thought. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I know what unsettled feels like now. I know what passion feels like. And so now I'm applying that feeling to almost everywhere in my life, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
We're getting off of fear, but we're talking about the trickle down effect from what fear, how fear permeates all these other areas of our life.
Mm-hmm. So it's really the fear of change and the fear of recognizing self, the fear of being honest with ourselves. So I see what you're saying. And And people, it's not like, oh, scary fear. It's like, oh my God, look at the way this has affected me.
Yeah. And what do I do about it? And what's my responsibility? And what's my teachings from, when I was a child, and what's all these other things come up. And so sometimes it's just easier to try to calm all of that down by staying where you are. Right.
Yeah. But I used this analogy with him. I likened it to, because he said to me, why can't this be easy? And I said to him, it can be. But when you are attempting to shove a square peg in a round hole, it doesn't fit. And when something doesn't fit, it makes you uncomfortable. So you take the peg and you get the sandpaper out and you whittle the thing down, and it still doesn't fit because it wasn't made to go in the round hole. It's right. Square. But so we have to acknowledge, I'm the square peg.
Right. But, so you and I, we both like these analogies, right? So when you were talking about that, what was coming up for me is somebody who is overweight, let's just say, and they're not comfortable with their weight. So it's not about shaming people who are overweight. This person is not comfortable in their clothes. They're not comfortable in their skin, right? And now every time they try something on, they're self-conscious. And every time they go out, they think people are looking at them and all this stuff that's going on, right? Because they're now aware that they don't like what they see, right? They don't feel comfortable in their skin.
Literally, they can even put clothing on that looks great, and they still have this feeling, God, I don't like the feeling against my skin. I wish I wasn't wearing these clothes, right?
Mm-hmm. It's too tight, it's too snug, it's too this or whatever, right? But that same person will feel just as bad when they first start exercising. Mm-hmm. I still don't feel good. I still feel uncomfortable, and exercising's hard, and I'm tired, and I'm winded, and all these things. So the feelings are not changing just because you've changed your behavior. Does that make sense? And so a lot of people will start out on that, here I see something that needs to change, and I'm not going to have the fear anymore. I'm going to go try to go to the gym, even though people might look at me, even though I don't look good in workout clothes. But when I leave the gym, I really don't feel any different. I still feel fat and ugly and all this other stuff, right? So the feeling is where we have to stop making the judgments about. We can't judge about how we feel. We have to say, I experience what I don't like, right? I have a fear around staying this way, and I have a fear around changing this way, right? I have a fear about both of those things, but I'm not going to allow either one of those to dictate what I actually do.
No, feelings are actually your friend.
Right.
And when, I wrote this in a post, and I told you about it, the other day. And I said, thinking is your friend and feeling is your lover. And when you are intimate with your lover, which is feeling, and your feeling is right on and it's flowing and it's good, the world, right, is literally your playground. And it creates this beautiful, happy, magical life. But when we have these feelings and it's like, oh, I can't stand the way I feel in these clothes, or God, I just don't even want to show up on this girl's doorstep because, I just feel so good. So what the feelings are doing, I think, is, and this is the way that I see it, is I always say, your feelings are showing you that you need to stop and you need to listen and you need to be okay with the fact that you feel uncomfortable. Because if you don't, you tie yourself into a knot and you go back into fear. And the fear is, I don't want to confront this. And when we don't want to confront it, we get tighter and smaller and smaller. And pretty soon we're in a ball and we're like, screw it. I don't want to do anything. It's like the fear of getting on a plane to go to Italy, right? I don't want to fly, right? And so a lot of people are afraid of flying and they do it anyway. Doped up, and I don't care how they get on the plane, just get on the plane and get there and enjoy Italy and get home safely. But when our fears stop us from living our life, right? Even when, say that my client broke up with the girl that he's comfortably uncomfortable with and was too afraid to have a relationship with this woman that he's very passionate for. And instead, he stays in the middle and does nothing, and he sees her as outside of himself, when actually she's a projection of something within him. It's a passion, I believe, that he wants to bring out within in himself. But he's got to get comfortable in feeling that passion. And the other thing that many people do is they do go after the relationship and they kill it. They sabotage it because they think to themselves, I'm going to feel this, and then, you know, it's going to be the last thing that I feel. And they ruin it for whatever reason. They get into a fight. They push the other person away because of the beliefs and the fears that they have about not being enough. Right. So my next question to you would be, once someone says, sheesh, you know what? I'm just scared. You know, I'm afraid of losing weight. I'm afraid I might fail. Right. But, you know, you got to try before you do that, right? I wrote a blog on this, you know, where you have to decide. You must make a decision, because once you make a decision and you are firm in that and you follow the steps, you know, soon it will become memory. It's like waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, the alarm goes off and you hit the snooze button. We have to stop hitting the snooze button in our lives and start to look at the things that are stopping us from living a life that really is more fulfilling and passionate, you know, taking lessons. Well, I don't have enough money. You would be amazed at the gifts that will come your way when you just say, you know, I want to go surfing. I don't know how to surf. God, I really wish I could have a free surf lesson, right? And you embody that. You feel it and you see it. 3 months later, somebody goes, hey, you know what? I never used this voucher. Why don't you go do it? Next thing you know, you have a surf lesson, right? I mean, that's what happens when we embrace it and we decide. The universe will collaborate with us and say, let me help you. But I see the universe as this fabric that it's like a gauzy fabric that is waiting for us to imprint upon it what we truly want. And so what I'm asking you as a therapist, right, and you can ask me too, right, as an energy reader, you can ask me whatever you want. I mean, within reason, of course. But anyway, you know, when we, you know, the universe will give you what you want, but you have to tell it what you want because you're the creator. And everybody thinks, oh, the universe already knows what I want. The universe knows what you want based on you knowing what you want. You are collaborating with it and it with you. It works through you and is you.
Right. And so, like you said, you're the spiritual, you know, energy worker. I'm the, you know, cognitive behavioral health person, right? And so the way that I see that is, yes, absolutely, the universe will give you what you want, right? However, it's also going to give you what you're willing to go after. Right? Even if that go after is mentally, right? So for instance,
accept, like I call it, like what you are willing to embrace, it will give you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if I'm willing to embrace the fact that I have to put on workout clothes that don't feel good to me, and I have to actually go outside and do some exercise, then yes, you will start to attract the feeling, the activity, the, you know, free gym membership, all those different things, all because that's where you're looking. That's, you're looking for that, right? Most of those things were in your face somewhere in my mind. Again, I'm not the energy worker. Were somewhere in your peripheral, but you couldn't focus in to see them. You get focused on what you want to see, right? So you're focusing on what you want to see, and now you get to see that. It works on both sides though, right? So I have white women generally that come in my office and they tell me that they know for sure their husband's having an affair because they've been looking at the phone records and they see this number and this number is not a usual number. And they tell me all the reasons why this affair is happening, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I said, well, then he's having one. So what's the problem? I mean, like, what is the issue? Well, I don't know why. I said, why are you talking to me? You need to talk to him. Mm-hmm. Well, he's not going to tell me the truth about the numbers on your phone, on the phone. And so mm-hmm. when we get down to the bottom of it, she was looking for the affair. So she found an affair. That doesn't mean mm-hmm. it's true. It does not mean that that's what actually happened. It just means that she found what she was looking for.
Right. So it goes back to what you seek, you'll find, right?
It's on both sides. So you can't just say, okay, yes, if I think all good positive things, all good positive things will happen. But if I think negative things, positive things should still happen. No.
Well, no, that, of course, that doesn't work that way. If you are entertaining negative thoughts, you usually get more negative thoughts. But when you make a decision to stop thinking that, and people have asked me about the delusion of that. And we're not talking about being delusional. We're talking about changing your thinking. And instead of continually thinking the negative thoughts, why can't you replace them with positive thoughts?
Right.
You can.
Where I'm going with that, with this particular conversation about this gentleman and this, you know, these two women that he's entertaining, is that in some ways he wants the positivity of this passionate relationship, right?
Yes.
But he's focused on the negativity of the relationship he's in. So that's what I mean by you can't get negative, can't get positive out of negative. It's going to give you negative and positive is going to give you positive. It's just the way it works, right? And so when we let fear get involved in some of our decision-making or subconsciously or consciously, we're basically deciding on the negative, the what ifs, the oh my God, the, you know, hippocampus firing out of control and irrational thoughts that happen after that, right?
So fear is a liar. I mean, because fear is literally a perception. Now, I'm not talking about, oh my God, there's a car barreling down the road and you're standing in the middle of the crosswalk fear. I'm talking about our perception about how this gentleman, for example, perceives this woman outside of him, and the passion scares him, right? Because he can get so caught up in that, I could lose myself. And oh my God, if I lose myself, what if she leaves me? And he's already gotten himself married, divorced, and miserable, right? Exactly. And that's a fear. It's a fear of loss. It's a fear of loving and have lost. And I've said to him, what hurts more? Staying in a relationship where you're settling, right? And you may disappoint someone temporarily, but you can also set them free instead of keeping them bound to you when you really don't want to be in the relationship. Or does it hurt more to love her and give it a shot and try this and go step by step instead of letting your fear take you as zooming out of control? Or does it hurt more to sit in the middle and not have either? You know, Stuart Wilde used to say, if you walk down the middle of the street, you're going to get hit by both sides of the traffic. And it's true. You know, at one point we have to take a stand because, you know, anything is possible. I mean, absolutely anything. I think that we create our own rules, and to let anybody tell us that some things are not possible, I think is criminal. Because I'll use myself as an example. You know, I wasn't raised with this, you know, what I do wasn't readily accepted when I did what, you know what I'm saying? In other words, being an energy reader and, you know, really loving what we can now, you know, quantify, you know, through quantum physics and science can really back up a lot of the energy, right? And there are people that can just read energy. And I'm not accurate with everybody. I mean, some people I just can't connect to. But it wasn't readily accepted. And, you know, I was embarrassed about it a lot because people would laugh at me when I was younger. And, you know, and finally, I later in my life, I really, really embraced it. And I'm really grateful for what I have and the life that I have and the work that I do. And when on Facebook and in Instagram, the girl that does my social media just posts everything, you know, that I give her, and she's, you know, constantly saying to me, you know, new post, you used to be able to give me 2 weeks worth of posts. And I was sitting in bed one night and I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to really wing it and put out what I really feel, the things that I really think. And I put a post out there, and it was something that I mentioned earlier in this podcast. And I said, if you don't tell the universe exactly what you want, it can't give it to you because you are the creator. And it just went wild. And I thought to myself, do you see what happens when you open your spirit and soul and you cut it loose and you give the information that comes and works through you? Look at what happens. It feeds the multitudes. You know, it's sort of like the 5 loaves and 2 fishes or whatever it was. You know, I hope I don't have that wrong. in the Bible and how, you know, Christ fed the multitude, you know, and it's amazing what, and so this is the upside of dealing with your fear, of getting to the place where what you want and you need to live your life for you and you need to feel for you. That's the upside of facing the fear. The downside or the hard part, I won't say that there's a downside to facing fear because I don't really feel like there is the part about facing yourself and realizing that you are the creator. And although you may say, but I wasn't the creator because when I was a child, these things were fed to me and I took everything in subconsciously. Okay, we'll give you a hall pass for that one, right? And we won't get into the spirituality of, you know, what people think before you came here, but we still are responsible for who we are today as adults and why our lives aren't working.
Right.
And so to be in a relationship that is passionless and you have a great friendship with this person, that's wonderful. Good for you. Right. But you're comfortably uncomfortable and you actually hurt them and you hurt yourself. And then there's this bridge, right? Because in, you know, between these two women is this gap that is making this guy really uncomfortable. And so it's wading through the water underneath that bridge, and you might run into a few, you know, sand sharks or something, but you've got to get to the other shore in order to live the life that you want. And so I think when you have people come in and they say to you, I'm blocked, you know, I feel like I can't get out of my own way. And I don't know what it is, right? We usually can identify it as we are fearful of something, right? How do you help them uncover something that they can't see?
Well, you know, part of it is, so let me just say what happens for me in the office, because this might make it make sense. I want to know what they're afraid of letting go of. What are they afraid to lose, right? And so usually
that's a powerful question. What are you afraid to lose? Yeah, no, that's very powerful. Yeah. So you would ask my client, what are you afraid of losing?
Yeah. Not what are you afraid to go to? Not all, what are you afraid of losing? You know, is it status? Is it money? Is it, you know, all these different things. And then based on what that answer is, that's what we learn how to let go of. Not the actual thing, but the feeling of fear around that thing. You know, what's the reality of that situation, right? So I have a Howard guy who, you know, same situation, had a couple women that he loved, one because mother of children, but didn't want to be with her, never did, and one somebody else and wanted to be with this one, but yet there was lots of money involved, right? So his fear was tied to poverty. Now he wasn't poor. He was very wealthy, but he had a poverty fear because of how he grew up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he grew up thinking and holding on to money as safety and security and status and all these different things. So when he saw that she was going to get half of his money, half of him, he felt was going with that. Right. So what's going to mean to who am I kind of thing? Had nothing to do with the dollar amount, because the dollar amount is still more money than you and I will ever see. The half he was going to get was more than you and I will ever see. And not only was it more than we ever see, he was set for life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? No one even would know how much he didn't have or how much he did have. And most of it was in a savings account.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like he was spending it anyway. It wasn't like his quality of life was going to change.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
How much money he could see in the savings account would.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So as we're talking about all these things, he's like, oh, wow. I didn't think about it like that. I didn't consider it like that. Oh, so I have a little person in me that needs to be healed from this fear that, you know, we don't have enough, because that's how he grew up. He didn't have enough. So he became, well, you know, in essence, a hoarder of money. He didn't use it to spend it. He didn't use it to buy things. He just used it to have.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so,
So what you're saying to me is, I mean, if I'm hearing this correctly, what you're saying is he created this resentment and fear and other things that surrounded the fear of poverty. In other words, a lot of people couldn't get right to the root of, I'm afraid of the poverty because that's how I grew up.
Right.
Instead, we cover it up. Same with relationships. You see what I mean? Does that make sense? So we do the same thing, right? In relationships.
Right. So that's kind of like,
yes, I get it. So in other words, his thing is, what if I absolutely fall in love with this girl? Something, and I know that it was from his past, right?
Right.
You know, he's afraid that he can never have what he really wants because he got, you know, allegedly stuck in this other thing.
Right.
Right. Which he didn't. He always had a choice.
Exactly.
And he made the choices he made based on beliefs that he had at the time. Exactly. You're exactly right.
So think about this. So, you know, even in that story, he's afraid of losing control. That's what he said. Losing control. He's so passionate about this lady. But yet, maybe that fear comes from he lost control in this relationship. He lost the ability to make decisions for himself. He lost the ability to get what he wants. So he has given up control to the relationship. Does that make
sense? And yes, it makes total sense because, and they didn't have the soul connection that he always dreamed of.
Right. And so
he became afraid, yes, that he could never have that. And then pretty soon, you're right, he had spun this web that isn't possible. I'll never have it. Now that he has the opportunity to have it, he goes, oh my God, I don't know what to do with it.
So I would wonder, as a therapist anyway, it's not everything that happens to us as a child is so significant that it affects us as adults, but I always have to double check, right? That's my mm-hmm. double check. I would double check and ask, did he ever feel out of control when he was a kid where he didn't have any autonomy? He couldn't make decisions for himself. No one listened to him. He didn't get what he wanted. You know,
large Italian family. Absolutely. On the East Coast Italian family. I mean, you know, lots of kids. I mean, I know my parents are full-blooded Italian, right? And I laugh because the Italians, I mean, I love my heritage. I think my heritage is great. But the Italians, you know, I laugh because people say to me, oh my God, they're so loud. And I go, yeah, the reason they're loud is they talk over each other. Nobody listens to each other, right? And so you wind up screaming at each other. And that's part of being, you know, in an Italian family, right? But it's always, you watch out for your sister. You watch out for your brother. Hold your sister's hands. You know, why did you leave your brother at the park? You know better than that. Go back. So there's all these responsibilities that come with being Italian.
Right. And so,
you see?
And so,
especially this guy.
Right. And it doesn't mean that every kid who grows up in an Italian family is going to have these issues as an adult, right? It's about their temperament, how he internalized these things, his sensitivity to these things. And that all put together could produce something like this versus it's just when you grow up in an Italian family, you're going to have these issues. You know, that's not true. It is true.
Right. That is true. Right. But specific to him.
But right. Specific to him. And if he did internalize those things, right, it has to go, that's like energy to me. When you internalize, when you swallow stuff like that, that's energy. And that energy has to go somewhere. And if it doesn't come out the right way, it still comes out. It just comes out sideways in your behaviors and your thoughts and all these other things.
It does. It oozes itself into our lives and our relationships, including, and if you looked at his work situation as well. You know, getting to a certain place, then worrying, am I going to be enough? Am I going to be fired? And there's another fear. And that feeling of not being enough permeates the relationship sector. It permeates his employment sector. You know, when he does extracurricular activities, like he plays baseball and things like that, it permeates everything.
And that was kind of my point at the top of this conversation was that when you have this fear that's out there, this acknowledgement, it starts to show up everywhere. And it's almost like the universe is saying, hey, I need you to pay attention. I'm going to put it everywhere so you can't miss it. Like, you can't miss it. Do something about this. But that's also, you know, him, his temperament and his desire and having the, you know, the wherewithal to overcome that fear, right?
Mm-hmm. So the big question for everybody that, and I want to wrap this up because I want to keep this podcast super tight. So, and then you and I will do a subsequent podcast in the next few days, specifically talking about what happens when you actually find your fear, because that's a whole nother podcast and the reactions and the things that we go to. But I'm going to tell you, it's nothing to be afraid of. It's actually exceptionally liberating to be able to face your fears and realize that you're the one in control. So back to what I was saying is to keep this podcast really tight. When we're in a situation like this, the question that you ask is, what are you afraid of losing? Write that down. Because when we begin to write it down, soon all these things pour out. And all of a sudden, and if you don't write it down, go on a walk and start talking to yourself or get quiet and think. Do whatever you can to get yourself into what is it that I'm really afraid of losing.
Right. And you know, one thing I ask people to do, especially when we're talking about this, is write down what you're afraid of losing, but do not think about what you're afraid of losing. Just
go from the heart.
Whatever comes out, and you might be so shocked at what that word, what that thought, what that phrase is. And that's where you get to your subconscious mind, your guts, your all those things that says you can peel back all the layers you want, but until you deal with this thing right here, you're going to keep digging. You're going to keep digging. And you're not going to get there. So I ask people to say, what are you afraid? You know, what are you afraid of losing? And write it down. First thought, don't think, just write.
That's really powerful. You know, I actually did a session with a guy that was 21. And I don't do a lot of sessions with really super young guys, right? And I did not think that he would be open to writing it down. But it was another situation. And I said to him, very similar to what we're talking about, write it down. And he came back the next day and he said, I did what you said last night. I spent 3 hours writing everything, just writing it all down. And my biggest fear is I'm afraid that I'm not lovable and I can't be loved. And then he was able to identify what it was specifically. And he said, now I realize that actually what I see and what I saw was not true. So I went into my mind and I meditated for like 10 minutes and I completely revised it. And I realized that his grandmother was actually dying of cancer and very ill. And he was, you know how kids, you know, they pull on somebody, and they don't see that this person doesn't feel good. They don't understand what's going on. And she snapped at him. And that was like, at the time, the love of his life, his grandmother. And he was like, oh my God. And he recoiled and really beat himself up over that. And then he went back to that, you know, to her and made it up to her. And even though she loved him and apologized to him, he had spent so much time beating himself up over it, he had created a pattern in his mind and it was subconscious. That's what we do when we're children. He was only 5. And I was so proud of him that he did the work. And he said, do you know, I feel like I have 100 pounds lifted off my shoulders and I can now give my girlfriend what she needs. I can now face her parents because he thought the parents hated him, etc. And so it's interesting to see what happens when we write it down, right? Because once you get there, and I had a very, very good friend of mine who's also a therapist, and he's got this really shamanic energy about him, and he's a healer for sure. I think all therapists are healers at their core. Well, not all, but at least the ones that I happen to resonate with. And one day he said to me, what do you want? And I said, I want to let go. And he said, then let go. And it was so soft and so light. It was like, I got it. And I went, oh, I can let go. You know, and it becomes sort of funny in a soft way where, yeah, you always could. But because you couldn't identify what it was and now you get it, get off the hamster wheel and let go. It's another way of saying, drop your shit. But it's a lot softer to say, nicer, right? Let it go. Yeah. Because drop your shit can be really harsh.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, yeah, we know we have our shit, but how do you drop it? And it's like, you let it go because it doesn't serve you anymore, because it's standing in your way of living a life that you want. And so back to what you said, I mean, if I can speak directly to you who are listening, write it down and ask yourself what you're afraid of losing. I think you'll be really surprised. And I highly encourage anyone who's struggling, get on my website at Jocelyn Live and book an appointment with Dr. Mari. I think you will get a lot out of it. So anyway, do you have anything else to add?
No.
Dr. Mari?
I think that we hit it pretty hard. And I, like you said, I think we need to have subsequent, you know, podcasts to flesh out some things, but I think this was awesome.
Me too. Yeah. So stay tuned for our next podcast. We'll definitely be talking about what happens when you actually find your fear and what it is that you're afraid of letting go of. And hopefully we can give you a little insight with that. So thanks again for listening. Dr. Mari, thank you always, always for being here with me. And we wish you guys a great life. All participants of the Jocelyn Live podcast have been thoroughly vetted and agree to discuss personal information on this podcast. Each participant is offered a referral to therapy if needed. No information given should be considered medical or mental treatment or advice. Thank you all for joining us. If you're interested in joining our podcast or you would like to participate in a podcast, please email info@jocelynlive.com.